Good afternoon. If you are listening, you're listening to, well, not Greg Kokel. My name is Jonathan Noyes. I'm one of the new speakers here at Stand to Reason, and I'm coming to you via a recording today. It's going to be for the podcast that Greg normally hosts, and what an honor, and it's really kind of actually surreal to be sitting here right now in this sound booth. Kyle and Amy staring at me, wondering what I'm going to say. They have fear in their eyes. And I'm just happy to be here and fill in for Greg. And today I really want to talk to you guys about something that's been on my mind, not because of anything really that's going on right now in the culture, but just something I've seen, I guess, a lot on YouTube. And there are these talks of these deconversion stories over the last maybe year or two. Prominent pastors, and then also just some personalities on YouTube and on podcasts are telling their deconversion stories, and they're actually kind of convincing, and they're really fun to watch, and I think it's fun to hear people's stories, but equally powerful, I think, are conversion stories, and as I'm listening to some of these deconversion stories, and if you guys don't know me at all, I come from a non-Christian background. I was an atheist for a long time until about 13 years ago, and I have a conversion story that I'd love to share with you, because I think our God gives us our stories to share with other people, and I think there's power in those stories. And mainly, I'm not just a Christian because it makes me feel good. I'm not a Christian because it gained me more friends. I certainly had a lot of friends when I was an atheist. I'm not a Christian because it made me more money. I certainly made a lot more money when I was an atheist even. I'm a Christian because it's true. It's a true story of reality. It accurately reflects the way things really are. And if I'm going to share my story with you guys today listening to Stand to Reason, I have to start at the beginning of my story. And actually, my story begins, as all good stories do, with I met a girl. I was living in Washington, D.C., working at a law firm, Jenner and Block, and having a great life out there. And I came out here to visit to Southern California. It was absolutely beautiful, and I could not go back to D.C. And eventually, I said, I want to live out here. And my first night out in California as a permanent resident, I actually met my wife, and she wasn't my wife at the time, obviously, but I was at a work party for my wife, and actually she was my sister's boss, and she introduced me, my sister, to Rihanna, and I started dating her after a couple months, and I was an ardent atheist. I love to talk about the things of faith with anybody who would listen. I would really try to engage. If I found out that you were a Christian, I'd want to take you out for a cup of coffee or a drink, and I'd want to ask you why you're a Christian. And to be honest with you, most of the time when I'm sitting there with my friends, they couldn't really give me good answers. And I kind of hate to say it right now, actually. Not only did they not give me good answers, oftentimes they would get upset with me because of my questions. I could have been maybe a little too bold for some people or too blunt, but oftentimes I'd bring things up like the problem of evil. Or I'd say to you, like, how can you believe an antiquated Bronze Age book full of myths? Or I'd say, do you really believe in a zombie? Do you trust a zombie for your salvation? And I'd bring these things up for people in reference to Jesus. And most of the time, I couldn't get any adequate answers. I never really interacted, I would say, in hindsight, with any real good thinkers who were Christians. And my friends, they had a good heart, good intentions, and they were good people, ultimately. I mean, some of them were my really good friends, and I enjoyed hanging out with them. But they never answered any of my questions. And actually, when I met Rihanna, we dated for a while, and she is in kind of an interesting area in her life, and she wasn't going to church, really, and I didn't know she was a Christian right away until actually our first Easter together. We were dating, and I remember getting an email from my brother. So my whole family is atheist, and I got an email from my brother mocking Jesus and mocking the resurrection and mocking the crucifixion. And I remember sharing this email with Rihanna and her being offended by it. And in hindsight, I can see why she was offended by it. It was definitely not, it just wasn't a good representation. And it also was highly offensive, but I thought it was really funny at the time. And then she told me she was a Christian. And from then on out, I was just always trying to ask her some questions. I'd say, wait a second. Are you telling me you actually believe in Adam and Eve? This is what you really believe. Like, this is insane. Like, I can't believe you believe in Adam and Eve. Or wait, you don't believe in evolution. Or I'd bring up the problem of evil. Or I'd bring up the person of Jesus. And even Rihanna, she would admit that that she didn't necessarily have the answers for me. She just always had a strong faith. And kind of around that time, she got interested in going back to church. And she actually asked if I wanted to go to church with her. And I've done crazier things for the affections of a woman. And so I said, sure, I'll go to church with you on Sunday. And we started going to church, and it was really weird for me at first. And I got saved in Studio City, California, and it was a really great church. David Polis was the pastor, or still is actually. And I remember being exposed to a Christian church for the first time ever. I'd gone to Catholic church growing up, maybe, I don't know, a handful of times. And I got to meet some really fun people. I made some really good friends. But they all believed this crazy stuff, this crazy stuff of Christianity. And I'd push into them. And again, a lot of the times I got met with the same responses. In my mind, not very intellectual, not very clearly thought out. They didn't, what I would say, I didn't think they matched up with the way the world really was. And then I went to actually a membership class with my wife because she wanted to become a member of this church, and I'm sitting there with the pastor, and my wife has an amazing story. Her life story is incredible, and she's sharing that with the pastor and his wife, and the meeting is going well, and then it came over to me, and they asked some questions about me. Well, I came to that meeting prepared. I had it in my mind that I was going to debate this pastor, and I was going to convince him that Christianity wasn't true. And I was going to get him to convert or deconvert like all these YouTube personalities, like all these pastors who leave the faith, supposedly. I was going to get him to right then and there admit that he didn't believe what he actually said he believed and my worldview was true. Well, that didn't happen. I asked a lot of questions, and Pastor Dave did a really good job at answering some of them. And then he did a really good job of when I gave him a question he didn't know the answer to, he said, you know what, John, that's a really good question. I've got no idea. I got to get back to you on that. But the main thing is that during that meeting, he was very authentic. He was very real, and he was truthful to me. When he didn't know something, he didn't purport to know it. And I really, really appreciated that from him. And at the end of the meeting, him, Pastor Dave and his wife, they hugged Rihanna, and they offered her membership to church. And then Pastor Dave took my hand in his. He shook it. And he said, you know what, John, we have enough members right now. We'd prefer you don't join this church. And again, I was kind of taken aback by that because I had it in my mind that they just wanted my money. That's really what membership at a church is all about. And when he didn't offer me membership, he caused me to think. And then the next thing he did would turn my worldview upside down. As he's shaking my hand and he says this to me, he turns me around to his bookshelf. And on the bookshelf, he pulls a book, Can Man Live Without God? By Ravi Zacharias. And that book changed me. I started reading it, and then I read it, and then I read it again and again and again. And for the first time ever, I started being able to interact intellectually with the Christian faith. There was stuff and information in that book that had never been presented to me before. And it's like my eyes were starting to be opened. And at the same time, I was given a Bible, and then I started reading that on the metro to and from work. I lived in Hollywood, California, and I was commuting downtown where I worked at a law firm. And I read that Bible every single morning for about 3 months. And during those 3 months, my worldview was just absolutely destroyed, my worldview of atheism, naturalism. And it's mainly because I experienced what actually, and Greg Kokel's the one who coined these terms, but I experienced some serious bumps into reality. You know, reality is the way things really are. That's how I describe it to my daughters. I've got four little girls. And during that time in my life, I was trying to live out my atheism consciously. So I was living purposefully towards being an atheist. And what I was realizing through the way that I was living is that reality didn't line up with my worldview of naturalism. And one of the main bumps that I was having was I say it's the bump that hurts. It was a bump that really hurt, and it was the cosmological argument, or the bump into stuff, the bump into stuff. And I started asking myself, and I've always been an inquisitive person. I've always been an imaginative person where I like to wonder and I like to dream, and I'm looking up into the sky at night and I realize all these stars are out there, and I'm just taken back by the grandeur of the universe and how did all this come to be, and who am I in this teeny tiny, you know, the pale blue dot, you know, as we've come to know it, Earth, and why am I here and how did I get here? Well, I started asking myself, well, how did anything get here? You know, and everything around me came from somewhere. And if it came from somewhere, where was that original place? And I didn't know the term, the Kalam cosmological argument yet. I had never come across that. But I was realizing the truth of what's in that argument for the first time on my own, just wondering to myself and to my then girlfriend and soon to be wife. I was wondering, okay, I see everything around me. It has to come from somewhere, because everything that exists, everything that begins to exist, has to have a cause. It comes from somewhere. And if the universe began to exist, that means the universe had a cause. And now I have to figure out what is that cause, because there's certain properties from that cause that have to be true. Greg Kokel loves to say it, that the Big Bang needs a big banger, is what he says. And I think there's a lot of rhetorical force behind that saying, because I believed in the Big Bang, and I believe in the Big Bang today. So there was a singularity, and then there was a moment in time when everything exploded. All matter, space, and time came into existence from nothing. But nothing comes from nothing, according to my atheism. According to my naturalistic worldview, nothing comes from nothing. It has to come from somewhere. And I just know this. And like I said before, I was leaning into my atheism. I was trying to live this out as rationally as possible and in real life. And I know nothing comes from nothing, because as I live life, things just don't appear to me. Like for example, if I were to go home today from this studio, if I were to drive home to Thousand Oaks, and parked in my driveway is a brand new Tesla X. And I go inside and I say, hey, oh my gosh, Ree, where's the new Tesla X from? And she said, oh, nowhere. Well, obviously, I'd say, wait, what do you mean nowhere? I mean, it had to come from somewhere. Well, it's the same thing. If I'm driving home on the 101 and things come from nothing, things can pop into existence out of nothing all the time, meaning they wouldn't even be safe to drive around. And I started to think like this as an atheist. I was thinking like this, and I was like, wait a second. If my worldview it doesn't leave room for a big banger, where's all this come from? And when I had to say that it came from nothing, I mean the philosophical sense of nothing. Nothing. That which rocks dream about. Nothing. And that just doesn't describe reality. And that was my first major bump into reality, I like to say. It was my first... The first time that I actually started thinking about my worldview, and as I started to press into it, the explanatory power of my naturalism was failing me, and these little cracks and fissures started to form, and I didn't know what to do with those. And so I'm wrestling with this mostly internally, and I'm thinking to myself, where did all this come from? And then I'm also looking at my lifestyle and how I'm living. And I'm a fairly successful paralegal, working on some major cases that major companies. I'm traveling the country. I'm experiencing success relationally. I'm experiencing success professionally. By all standards, life is very, very good. But internally, I'm starting to feel conflicted, because the way that I'm living isn't lining up with the world around me. And all started there as I stared out into a hugeness of space and realized it all had to come from somewhere, and I didn't have an adequate answer. At least I couldn't, according to my atheism, I couldn't find an adequate answer of where it all came from. I needed a banger, and a big banger wasn't room for that in my story. And then I started to struggle again, because then I started to really look at my lifestyle, the way I was living life. And as I pressed further and further into my atheism, if I'm being honest with you guys, I just wasn't living a good life. And it wasn't healthy in a lot of regards. I was thinking I was being successful relationally, and it just wasn't successful relationally. I wasn't living a life that I thought was moral. And then I started to think about that. From a naturalistic perspective, from an atheistic perspective, when I say I'm not living a moral life, what do I mean by that? Well, I didn't really have an answer for that. And that was my next big bump into reality. Because there's a moral oughtness to the world around us. And I kept bumping into that. And this one really stung. Greg Kokel calls it the bump of bad. Because I realized that I was doing bad things. I realized that I was doing immoral things. But according to my atheism, it was all relative, ultimately, in the end. I couldn't explain why I knew things were wrong. Like major things. I'm not talking the little things, but major things. Why was rape wrong? I started thinking about these things, the things I saw in the world around me. I was highly involved politically. As I said, I lived in Washington, D.C. for a number of years. That's where I did my undergraduate work, and I got involved politically. Well, in the political discussion and in the political realm, in the legal realm, my profession where I was working, it's a highly moral job. I mean, you're dealing with the law. Who am I to say what's right and wrong, ultimately, because it's all subjective to me. I would have said that it's up to the community around you, right? It's a social contract, ultimately. It's a social contract. We get together as a group, as a culture, as a society of people, and we decide what's right and wrong. But then I started getting pressed into by some of my now Christian friends, and they'd say, wait a second, okay, so if we decide what's right and wrong, then, of course, the example that they all go to, everybody goes to, is Hitler and Auschwitz and the killing of 6 million Jews and others during that time. Who are you to say that that's wrong? Because in that culture, if you were an SS guard, you would have said it's right. And when I really started to think about that, I had a real intellectual problem with it. Because I had to admit, according to my atheism, according to my naturalism, I think they had a point. Because all I had left to justify what's right and wrong is how I felt, my feelings. But even my feelings started betraying me because as I pursued things that I knew weren't right, I had an inward conscience. Something inside of me was telling me these things were wrong. Not wrong because of me. Not wrong because a society or a culture said that they were wrong. Wrong because they were objectively wrong, meaning they were always wrong. One of the major issues that's always hot, the hot topic that really solidified this with me was abortion. I used to be not. I wouldn't have categorized myself as pro-choice. I would have categorized myself as pro-abortion. I remember distinctly, I was standing in Todd's kitchen. It was one of my first Bible studies. I wasn't a Christian yet, by any stretch of the imagination. He was leading me through a Bible study, The Fear of the Lord, my first Bible study ever. And I'm standing there with a group of young couples, and it was in his kitchen in Studio City, in a little apartment across his peninsula, and we were arguing abortion. And I distinctly, to this day, remember telling him, no, I think you should be able to kill any baby at any time. That's my position, because know what? I was trying to live out my worldview according to what was available to me in that worldview. So I would have defended, infanticide. And I had been. But then what was happening at this time is I started being introduced to some of the, I don't want to say intellectual arguments, but they are intellectual arguments. I was being introduced to these arguments that all human value is worthy of life. And if I'm going to argue against that, if I'm going to say that only some people are valuable and these people aren't, if I'm going to say this, I have to choose a standard. And if I'm choosing a standard that's subjective, that means I can say a good friend of mine, his name is Nick Vujicic, he's got no arms and legs. I could say that he is less valuable of a human being because he's got no arms and legs. That's going to be my standard. But that was clearly false. That was clearly false. My wife is 5'2". I'm 6'3". I'm no more valuable because of my size. And these are the things that were going through my head. And I relate that to a baby that's in the womb. Am I any more valuable because I'm bigger than the baby in the womb. I'm more human because I'm further along developed. Well, I've got four little girls, 9, soon to be 8, 6, and 3. Is my 9-year-old more valuable than my 3-year-old because she's more developed? Well, I don't think so. And I'm not putting forth a pro-life argument here. I'm just trying to let you guys in on my thought process as I came from atheism, as I came from a naturalistic worldview, and I'm traveling through that. I'm pressing into that towards the Christian worldview. The existence of a moral sphere, a moral realm, a moral oughtness started to become absolutely clear to me. And that night in Todd's Studio City apartment, when I had that conversation with him, stands out in my mind as a watershed moment for me, where, because I like to argue and I didn't want to lose arguments, I was probably too prideful to tell him that he was right. I it's in my mind right now that he was. And that at that moment, I remember thinking, oh man, I think he's got me on this. Because if I'm going to go with my subjective standards, that means I got to avail other people to their subjective standards. And that now it's very quickly might makes right. This is what I mean when I bumped into reality, the bump of bad. Because when you eliminate these moral standards, when you eliminate a moral standard within a culture, I think it gets bad very quickly. And I think that we see that, and we've seen it in the past. I just recently went to Auschwitz. Maybe 3 years ago, I was in Auschwitz, and I remember standing there, and now a Christian, of course, but I'm standing there on a perfect day. Beautiful sky. I remember not a cloud in the sky. It was 85 degrees out. It was absolutely gorgeous, and I was there among thousands of people, and it was completely silent. You didn't hear one person speaking. Maybe you hear the people of their shoes shuffling through the dirt on the dirt paths. But other than that, you didn't hear anything. Why? Well, because there's a reverence. Why? Well, because you know when you're in there, there's something that happened there that was in this case incredibly wrong, incredibly evil. But in order for me to label it wrong or evil, I have to have a standard. I have to have a judge, something that I can hold up next to this and say, this is wrong. On my naturalism, I don't think I could have done that. If I stood there as an atheist, what's the difference between Auschwitz and Disneyland? I don't think the naturalist has good reasons to say that ultimately there is any difference, which is a scary place, and it's a major bump in the reality. For me, it was, at least. And then I started looking more and more into why I seem to have these moral intuitions, and started totally internally with these feelings. But then I became to understand the moral argument that if there is a moral standard, there has to be a thing by which to judge a right from wrong. If not, it's just left up to my own individual choice. And that leads to a very scary place very quickly. And that was the second bump into reality for me. And before I get into the third, I think that maybe what we'll do is take a break and then we'll come back and discuss my final bump into reality. And then maybe I can just let you guys know where I'm at and why, hopefully. And it's just such a great honor to be in this studio, mainly because I'm with Kyle. And Amy too, of course. But no, I'm standing in for Greg Kokel, and if you're listening, you're listening to Stand to Reason. I'll be back in just a few short seconds.
What comes into our mind when we think about God is the most important thing about us. Everyone has ideas about God. Unfortunately, many people hold false ideas about him, and these ideas have consequences. Some false ideas have led people to worship a God of their own making, while others have led people to reject God altogether. This year, we've devoted an entire conference to answering the most common false ideas about God. Is God anti-gay? Is God good? Do Muslims and Christians worship the same God? These are just a few of the topics we'll be addressing. The only way to guard against false ideas is to fill our minds with true ideas. So join me and a number of other speakers at one of this year's Rethink Apologetics student conferences. Find out more information about Rethink by going to rethinkapologetics.com. That's rethinkapologetics.com.
Would you like Greg, Alan, or Tim to come speak at a location near you? If so, just send a quick email to darcy@str.org to schedule them today. Our speakers are accomplished and compelling presenters who address, from a biblical standpoint, topics like abortion, homosexuality, and evolution, as well as apologetics, theology, and evangelism. They're available to teach lectures and seminars, preach sermons, and lead workshops at single events or weekend-long conferences. Their aim is to help Christians like you effectively engage the culture around you with knowledge, wisdom, and character. To learn more, just go to str.org and click on the training tab at the top of the page.
All right. This is really fun music. I don't know if I've heard this music on the intro. This is like new. And if you're listening, I'm a fairly new voice. My name's John Noyes. I am one of the speakers. I think I'm the newest speaker on the Stand to Reason team. And I get the privilege of filling in for Greg Kokel this episode. And this is like, I mean, you talk about big shoes to fill. I've been talking about my bumping into reality and about my story and how I met Rihanna, my wife, and the things that the world around me, as I start to notice that my atheism, my naturalism wasn't really, I think, descriptive of reality, of the world around me. It didn't provide to me explanatory power, describing the way things really are. And I got to say that this very podcast, this very show that Stand to Reason puts on with Greg was instrumental in my walk as I came from atheist to Christian. I was actually listening to this show and I was listening to Greg, and I remember arguing with him. At the time I was listening to him on the radio. It was like a 3-hour show. And I remember arguing with him and being, no, that's not right. And wrestling. And then I think that in many ways, a lot of the reasons why I am the way that I am have to do with Stand to Reason and the resources that they put out. And to be able to sit here in the studio right here now, I was just talking to Amy. It's very surreal. It's almost dreamlike because it's just insane. The first time I met Greg was at church, and I was giving my testimony, and he came out after me and asked if I wanted to get breakfast with him eventually. And I told him he was my idol. And I remember thinking, oh man, that was totally the wrong word to describe Greg Kokel, because Greg like really cares about words. You know, if you say, let me pick your mind, I mean, he like goes, let me pick your brain. It's your mind. You can't pick your brain. And I just said, it's just being here is just amazing. And being able to share my story in this context because of the work that Stand to Reason has meant to me, and then being able to join the team is just amazing. And I'm so grateful to be here. And I've been discussing kind of the bumps of reality I've been having in as an atheist and leading into my Christian my current Christian state has been a journey. About 13 years ago, I transitioned, I'd say, from an atheist to a Christian. I deconverted from atheism or from naturalism. And converted to Christianity for good reason, not because it made me feel better, not because it gained me success, money, or friends, but because I think it's the way the world really is. And that happened through a series of bumps. And the first was like the bump of matter, the bump of stuff. And I was looking out and I was experiencing the world around me, and I was asking myself, where'd it come from? Well, nothing comes from nothing. And it ultimately came from somewhere. And I didn't go into the Kalam cosmological argument formally, but ultimately I could not say that the Big Bang was just appeared out of nowhere. It had to come from somewhere. And as I started to think that through, my explanation started to sound an awful lot like God. an immaterial, all-powerful, creative, non-physical, non-temporal mind. And my worldview didn't have a space for that. And then I had, the bump of a moral realism, a moral reality around me as I started to press into my atheism and tried to live my atheism really out by just doing what I wanted when I wanted. I realized very quickly, that number one, it really led to dark and not good places as far as health, both physical and spiritual and emotional health, relational health with people around me. But it just didn't line up with the way things really were. There was a moral depth to reality, and my atheism it couldn't go anywhere. I could lean on evolution for it. Maybe I tended to go more towards a social contract, and it just wasn't working out for me. And then there was another bump, and this was really one of the final bumps for me. And it's funny I say that because it's actually the bump of me is what actually Greg says is the bump of me. It's an existential crisis. I found myself all through my life. I said before that I was kind of a dreamer and a free spirit is probably how you'd categorize me. But my soul always hungered for deeper meaning. Always. There was always a cry for ultimate significance and love and acceptance. And How do we search for these things? What do we do with our deepest desires, especially amidst our brokenness, you know? And I started, again, leaning into my atheism, you know? And then there was no room in my naturalistic story for the existence of the soul. And then I remember actually, I think J.P. Moreland brought this example up. Right before I converted to Christianity, I was listening to a bunch of lectures by the folks at Biola, and J.P. Moreland is a professor at Biola, or Talbot, I guess. And he says this, and it's a mind experiment, just a thought experiment that everybody can do. You can do it right now, unless you're driving, don't do this. But you just, if you close your eyes right now and picture in your mind a beautiful green lawn. Picture a massive, expansive front lawn of a beautiful home. Perfectly manicured, perfectly kept. It's that beautiful, bright green that lawns get to be in the height of spring, where they've been watered and fertilized, and there's nobody on them to destroy them. And your eyes are closed. You can picture that lawn. And now go closer to the lawn and picture a small portion of that lawn, and then go closer still. And now picture a blade of grass in your mind. Picture its smell. As you pluck that piece of grass and you're staring at it and you see it divided almost perfectly in two with the main root going through the middle of it. And then you smell it and it smells like fresh cut grass. And now I ask you, where is that blade of grass that you just picked? Because on my story of naturalism, I needed to find that grass physically in my brain. Meaning if naturalism is true, I should be able to cut my brain open and see that blade of grass. The way J.P. Moreland says it, he said, is that blade of grass closer to your right ear or your left ear? Well, it's neither, because it's in my mind. And also notice something that there's something non-physical that's happening. And this is what really blew me away by this experience is I could experience all of my senses through that experiment without actually having any grass in front of me. I experienced the smell of grass without any grass around me. I experienced, obviously, the sight of grass, meaning I had the even now as I'm talking, my eyes are closed and I'm picturing that green grass. I can see that color green. Well, there's no physical like waves of light for me to perceive, but yet that green grass is still there. So I experienced that, and I could touch that grass. Grass for me makes me itchy. I can feel the itch that beautifully manicured lawn would make me feel. But you see, when I dig deep into my atheistic worldview, my worldview of naturalism, I didn't have a category for this. Because if everything has a physical explanation, yeah, I could explain it maybe by neurons and electro impulses in my brain, and that stuff. You know what? There's people out there who know that stuff way more than I do. But ultimately, I couldn't explain the existence of my mind, myself. And then I was introduced to an atheistic author, Thomas Nagel. He's at New York University, and he wrote The Mind and Cosmos. And the subtitle to his book is Why the Materialistic Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. And he kind of leaned into this idea that we have a soul, we have minds that exist outside of physical nature, because according to my naturalism, everything had to be explained by a physical process, and I should be able to prove everything through the scientific method, through scientific means. I should be able to put everything into a beaker, or I can measure everything with a ruler, or I can do all these scientific tests, but I had no proof for the existence of my mind, for the existence of my soul. And it just seems so clear to me that these things existed, especially when I was thinking about these examples. You know, I've done the same thing over and over again in my mind, picturing different things. And when I chop my, if I chop my brain open, I'm not going to find that blade of grass. And for me, that really kind of rocked my world. And I think that is indicative of something wonderful about us. There's something wonderful about humans. There's something wonderful about the fact that we have a soul, that we're not just our physical bodies, that we're not just glorified apes. There's something beautiful in that. And I started to embrace that, you know. There's a reason in that we're special. You know, when we hire, I don't know if you guys have ever bought a house, so when you buy a new home, you know, if you get your termite inspection, it comes back positive for termites, you tent your house and you kill the termites. Well, we don't do that for human beings. Why? Well, because I think that there's a higher value in human life than there is termite life. But on naturalism, I think that we have no reason to believe that humans are special. There's no reason to believe these things. And my atheism wasn't a lot. I didn't have a category for this. And it was really rocking my world. I had an existential crisis that my naturalism now ultimately had, after these bumps in reality, especially this third bump in reality, I had been reduced, me personally, I had been reduced to cosmic junk. I was a biological accident. I was a meat suit in motion. I was a sum total of my parts, and there was no meaning to my life other than the arbitrary meaning that I could give myself. But even then, because there was a moral realism, it seemed to me like the arbitrary meaning that I was seeking after, there was a right and a wrong way to do that. You know, and then I found myself very quickly in this bump into reality going towards nihilism. And then when you start talking about nihilism, then there's really no purpose to even live. Like, why not just lay in the gutter and die? These are things that I was experiencing. So this was all taking place over the course of 3 months. And for me, it seems like a really short period of time. I remember thinking back on these bumps in the reality, and life was changing so drastically during this time in my life. I was thinking deeply on my the way I was living life, and I was thinking deeply on what I thought to be true. And my world was completely rocked. See, I had been taught naturalism is true forever. That's what I had been taught. That's what I've been taught in school. That's what my brother believes. That's what my sister believes. That's what my cousins believe. You know, my parents, they had differing views. They wouldn't, expressly say that they were naturalists, but they certainly leaned towards those principles. That's all I knew was naturalism. And for the first time in my life as a 20-something-year-old, I think I was 25, 24, 26, for the first time in my life, I was realizing, oh my goodness, my worldview doesn't explain the deepest and most important things around me. And I said before at the very onset of this story that I had been given a Bible, and I was reading that Bible on the metro. And I remember at the time my wife thinking, well, she was my girlfriend at the time, but thinking it was so weird that I was sitting on the metro reading a Bible. It was one of those New Believer Bibles. It's edited by Chuck Lorre. Or Greg Laurie, and it has cornerstones, and it's a really great Bible, and an NLT translation. I'd read that thing cover to cover. over that 3-month period. Every single day, morning and night, I would read it twice a day for about an hour and a half. And I was having, so intellectually, I was coming to grips with the failure of my naturalism to explain the world around me. But then also on the other side of it is I had the Word of God filling in these cracks and fissures, these holes. And so spiritually, I think I was being ministered to by the Word of God. And I was being changed. I was being transformed right in front of Rihanna's eyes. She saw me go from an ardent, I mean, argumentative, staunch atheist to a Christian in the span of 3 months, wholesale, where I wanted to give everything up. It just, if I could have Rihanna on the mic with me today, there were times where I'd walk out of the bedroom and I'd just be like, okay, we need to give it all up. Like, we need to sell everything and go to the mission field because Jesus was raised from the dead. I'm finding a loss of words to describe this to you because I went from the idea, the understanding that there's no ultimate meaning and purpose in life, that people aren't really valuable outside of the value that we prescribe to them. That's temporal, that's subjective, to that there is ultimate meaning in life, that human beings are ultimately valuable because they're made in the image of God. And that's the biggest change is I came to realize that God existed. I went from no God, do what you want, to God exists and we should be seeking to do what he wants. And it affected every area of my life. There wasn't an area that went untouched by this. It was a radical transformation. And now I' 'm sitting here 13 years later, guest hosting Stand to Reason's podcast for Greg Kokel. This is unbelievable stuff. And I kind of want to wrap up here by saying I'm going to reiterate what I've said now twice before because I think it's really, really important. We don't believe what we believe because of the way it makes us feel. I'm not a touchy-feely kind of person. I don't believe what I believe because it gains me a ton of friends or popularity. That certainly just isn't true. It's if anything, it's caused wedges between many of my most important relationships. Almost all of my friends were atheists. That's who I surrounded myself with. That's who I got along with. They weren't pleased when I had to come in. I mean, I remember going home for the first time, flying home, and sitting in, it was a red eye, and sitting in a breakfast with my brother and sister at a restaurant, and him saying, "So, I heard you're a Christian now." And I just knew the ridicule that was going to come. I believe what I believe because it's true. Because it accurately reflects reality, the way things really are. There's the best explanatory power in the Christian worldview. That's why I believe what I believe. Not because of these any other things. You know, and it's through these bumps in reality. And maybe you guys listening, maybe you guys have come to you have a similar story. Maybe you've come to faith through a similar means that you've had these bumps in the reality that these arguments for the existence of God and the testimony that the world around us gives us. Maybe that's what it's taken you. Or maybe you're listening right now and you're not a believer. And I would love to, I wish I could have a two-way dialogue with you to talk about these things. Maybe you have questions or maybe you're one of, like I was, that you just like to mock. But all I know is that through these bumps in the reality, through these bumps, I saw that God is real and he is who he says he is through the scriptures. And it fundamentally transformed me and made me who I am today. And I'm so incredibly grateful. And that's just a little bit of my story, guys. And there's so much that goes in there. And since then, it's been a whirlwind. And like I'd say to my wife, I am just happy to be here. Generally in life and here hosting the radio program for Greg. And what an honor it is to be part of this Stand to Reason team. And just thank you guys so much. So I'm going to sign off now. And if you guys have questions, I'd love to hear from you. Just email us here at Stand to Reason or call anytime for the radio broadcast. All right. We'd love to hear from you. Talk to you then. This is John Noyes with Stand to Reason.